While you're thinking of questions, perhaps I might just throw to our panelists. Brad, do you have a quick response to what you heard from Jeff? And likewise, Jeff, do you have a quick response to what you heard from Brad?
Thanks, David. Jeff, I think you're a very powerful advocate of your approach, and of course I'd expect nothing less. But I'm particularly interested in understanding how it is you'd propose that you determine the embedded carbon value in any import coming to the country in such a way that you don't wind up with a bureaucratic nightmare and a series of complaints from exporting nations that, much like Australia once did on imported pig meat, we'd actually confected a nasty set of scenarios that really didn't exist.
Best you can do.
We'll start there.
You don't need to worry about the emissions embedded in imports. Indeed, because of WTO considerations and in order to make the policy tractable, running off a GST model, you determine the emissions intensity of a particular product as it's produced in Australia. That emissions intensity multiplied by the carbon price or carbon tax in Australia. My scheme can work with an ETS. The emissions intensity multiplied by the carbon price gives you an ad valorem cost adjustment for that product, which divided by the product price gives you a percentage adjustment. That percentage adjustment is applied to the matching import of that product, just the way a GST does. That means that the ad valorem adjustment to both the locally produced product and the import is the same, just as it is with a GST. It's WTO compliant, just as a GST is, just as a luxury car tax is, just as the wine equalisation taxes, just as all the revenue customs duties are.
Can I follow up?
Sure, go ahead.
Because this depends on emission intensity, I wonder then how you deal with aluminium produced in Western Australia based on gas-fired generation, that is at about 0.5 to 0.6 of a tonne per megawatt hour, versus aluminium produced in Victoria, where the average is 1.4 tonnes per megawatt hour?
Yep, again, starting off, we're going to be, all of this, by the way, whether it's about ETS or carbon tax, consumption or production, all of this depends on carbon accounting. And we're going to start off with carbon accounting that's pretty rough. We're either going to start off with product groups that are going to have to be averaged. I've gone through this in excruciating detail in the second policy note. Anyone with insomnia, I recommend it. But again, it's a question of making sure that the product average emissions intensity multiplied by the carbon price is the adjustment made to those products in Australia wherever produced, and therefore the same ad valorem adjustment is made to matching imports wherever they're produced. It's an average, and over time, as the carbon accounting gets more refined and more detailed, you'll be able to drill down and get a more discriminating approach over time. In fact, my model has three phases: an inception system phase, where it's pretty rough averages, relying on the best carbon accounting we've got in Australia. As it gets better, we allow a bit more competition within Australia between products. The ones with the lowest emissions intensity get a bit of assistance relative to the ones with higher. And then in the longer term, when you've got credible accounting frameworks overseas, you might even think, this will be subject to negotiating WTO rules, you might even think about actually allowing products to be traded not only in terms of their characteristics and price, but also in terms of their embedded emissions, once you've got a credible framework for measuring those, and then you would have genuine emissions trading where countries would be allowed to trade their emissions, their low emissions advantages internationally.
Well, we're going to have the opportunity to pursue this a little bit further in the panel session after lunch, so we might just leave that particular point there, but I'd better give you the opportunity, Jeff, to respond to Brad's presentation.
Look, I think In one sense, we're talking on different paths. My model can work with an ETS. I just think that's the worst way to go, but it can work with an ETS. The reason I worry about an ETS is not its conceptual appeal. I think, in theory, both could deliver the same price or quantity outcome. One fixes price, quantity is determined by the market. The other fixes quantity, price is determined by the market. The practical problems with an ETS in Australia and in the European context are the things that worry me, especially in the context of investment certainty. We don't have investment certainty either with respect to price or with respect to emissions quantities under the proposed CPRS. We don't have quantity certainty, contrary to what the Minister says, because point one, we've got carbon leakage risks, which mean that any reduction we make in part counts for nothing because it's just shuffled offshore. Secondly, we've got the right to import emissions permits from overseas, and they violate the cap that we've set anyway. Again, we haven't got certainty. When you've got business cycles and the price is determined by a quantitative decision of government interacting with demand and supply through the economic cycle, price is volatile. We know that. We've seen that in Europe. In fact, in Europe at the moment, the carbon price is such that emissions permits, I assume, are getting very close to the same quality of investment asset as subprime mortgages in the United States. We don't get a reliable price. We don't get a reliable quantity. With a carbon price, on the other hand, you would give businesses something that they do value, especially for long-term investments, which is a relatively predictable, ramping up over time, price for emissions, which they can then plan their investment decisions on.
Brad, do you want to respond to that? Because you did say having a stable, predictable climate for investment was really one of your key principles.
Yep. I guess this really comes down to your faith in government, and I don't have a great deal of faith in government in setting taxes. I do actually. They'll set them all right, but they change them, and they change them at a whim, without a great deal of need to consider broader investment outcome. I actually think that when you start seeing cap and trade schemes where there is a pathway mapped out forward, where it's quite possible then to start determining the likely value of permits and the range that they most reasonably will be operating in, you have an ability to manage some of your price exposure better than you do with the tax. And I think this is quite possibly a point where Jeff and I will probably agree to disagree. But I do think that unless we have an utterly delinquent government, as soon as you've started this market and you have real value sitting out there in permits, the last thing it needs to do is start to be intervening and arbitrarily stranding permit value.
I know, Jeff, you want to respond, but just let me just make one point from the European experience. The volatility of permit prices has been such that it's been up around 35 euros, ranging to around about 3 euro cents.
Yep, and I'm happy to respond to that because I think that it's been a little too easy, frankly, to jump on that from this side of the world and say the Europeans have a failed experiment. In fact, if you go and have a look at a fair analysis of it, there are a series of governance and informational issues that turned up there. The first is, thankfully in this country we're dealing with one nation. In the EU they started out with 15, now up to 27 odd. Sovereign nations each able to allocate their emission permits as they saw fit, subject to some loose oversight by the EU. Not surprisingly, each of those governments sought to advantage their own country and in many cases over-allocated. But in the first period, the market did not understand that there was no scarcity. It was when it became apparent after about 18 months that there was no scarcity that the price crashed. The second reason the price crashed right at the end was that the permits that were issued in the first allocation period over 4 years had no value into the second allocation period. So at the point at which the scheme was concluding, any value in a permit was worth it because after, I think it was the 30th of June, there was zero value on it. Mm. So the volatility is largely down to informational asymmetries and a fairly poor governance arrangement. Subsequently and recently, and Jeff's quite right that the price of EU permits is pretty low at the moment, but it is absolutely on the back of a depressed economy where the activity levels and therefore the emissions have dropped, and frankly I would have thought in that circumstance you want to see the carbon price come down.
Mm. Well, Jeff, I think we'll give you the last word before we break for lunch.
I'm a big believer in sovereign risk, and we're going to get sovereign risk with governments, especially over long periods of time, whether we like it or not. I'd like to take my sovereign risk in transparent doses via tax rates rather than in other forms. And if you want to look at sovereign risk in this environmental area, just have a look at the ACT government's feed-in tariff and the way it's financed. Yep. It is a little piece of dynamite. Just on the revenue side, this is an opportunity, if we believe that there's an externality to be dealt with here, that is global warming, this is an opportunity to use a large chunk of the revenue raised from a carbon tax not to reduce real living standards, or not to reduce them much, not to increase the overall tax burden. In fact, it'd be better to leave the tax burden the same or reduce it slightly, but it's an opportunity to use that revenue to get rid of a whole raft of inefficient taxes in Australia, not least at the state level, do a few other things about vertical fiscal imbalance possibly at the same time, and end up with an efficiency dividend working from both sides. That is, improved efficiency in terms of dealing with an environmental problem, and improved efficiency in the more conventional sense by getting rid of taxes that at the moment impose large deadweight losses on the economy.